What father are we focusing on? The word is often patriarch. What in these chapters here, who are we zeroing in on?
Jacob.
That's correct. Quite a few chapters on him. If we went back to 29, we find where he meets Rachel. Then from 29 to 31, he's trying to get away from his relative, his in-laws. He's trying to escape his in-laws. Anybody, have you ever done that? Try to escape your in-laws. Yeah. Larry, how's the can you control the volume?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting a little feedback. Up here? Would that be the master carm, or would that be the best? It seems to be settling. Bring it down more. I have to talk. Okay, so I'm talking. We have Jacob leaving the area where his in-laws are. And can you all see this little red dot? Okay, so way up here in the ceiling is where he marries Rachel and Leah, or Leah first and Rachel. And then he's, how's that for volume? Does that sound good? And then he's he comes back down here, and he finds out that his brother Esau is coming to meet him. But we were focusing last week on Leah and Rachel, and kind of doing some takeaways. Sometimes takeaways and lessons are maybe a little bit of a stretch, and sometimes they're not. And I hope it wasn't last week. But we're asking the question as far as application. The issue is not, do you love God? Remember we ended with that? It's not, do you love God? The question is, do you love God? Bouncing off of this chapter there, it was chapter 30 primarily, 29 and 30. Do you love God like Jacob loved Leah? Or do you love God like Jacob loved Rachel? Now, if we look at it, the answer should be we should love God and make him our favorite, like Rachel was made Jacob's favorite. But we also had another takeaway, which is from God's viewpoint, and that's he knows how Leah felt. She got the leftovers and the crumbs, and she wasn't Jacob's first love. He wasn't enthralled with her. And the being loved less is exactly what Jehovah endured through all the centuries, really from beginning of time. But especially as we start reading through the Old Testament into the New Testament, that's how we see mankind basically treating Jehovah. He has emotions, he has feelings, and we can please him, or we can break his heart when we sin and betray him and fail to give him purity of heart and purity of commitment. So sadly, that's over and over, that's what mankind has done. I'll give you some attention, I'll give you some service, I'll give you some worship, but overall, the allurements of the world are greater. So that was our lesson last week. And again, there's that favoritism thing going on, which is exactly what happened with Jacob and Esau, and Jacob does the same thing with his wives. Were there any other tidbits or takeaways or applications that you came up with maybe during the week? I'm sure you were thinking about Genesis all week. No? That surprises me. If you're on email and Facebook, I did assign, because I forgot to do it last week, readings of, and I didn't do the phone tree. 33 to 38. In 32, chapter 32, Esau's headed his way and Jacob's scared to death. Now, why would Jacob be afraid of Esau? Kelly says it didn't part well. Carm? Stole his birthright. Stole the blessing. He sold his birthright. Stole the blessing. There's two things. And he took them both. Those things are very important. We discussed how in that culture how very important it was. But also, faith in God seems to be connected with that. Because, and I don't know, Gail brought up some great points last week. And I don't know, I used the word profane. Esau was profane. And by that, I didn't mean he swore a lot. I meant he, in his birthright, he made his birthright common. That's what profane means. I don't know if I explained that yet. He made his birthright as common as a meal, common meal. And so we see some indications with Esau that he was not an individual who developed faith the way Jacob did. But Jacob, again, was flawed, just like Isaac, just like Abraham. Jacob's even though he wasn't the outdoorsman like Esau, he was a conniver and a schemer and tenacious. And we're going to see that right here in this chapter. Dad, do you feel like reading? We'll swing around this way on this side. If you don't want to read, just say pass as we go through class here. Chapter 32, 24. Down to 32.
It's just 32 beginning of verse 24.
You know what, Dad? Hang on a second. I'm gonna back you up to verse 9. We're gonna put 9 through 12 together with this the latter part of the chapter. So Esau's approaching him, and Jacob is Esau's presence is causing Jacob to seek Jehovah a little more fervently. Check me if you think that's what's going on here. So, Dad, 32, 9 through 12. Sorry to switch that on you.
And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, you said to me, return to your country and to your kingdom, that I may do you good. I'm not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. With only my staff, I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camels. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children.
Okay, keep going.
Verse 12. But you said, I will surely do you good, and make your offering as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered or multiplied.
So Jacob is referring to Jehovah. You said, Jehovah God, that I will surely prosper you. And he had. He's blessed him already. That was at the where he saw the ladder coming down from heaven. What's Jacob's name mean again? Anybody? Woo! Supplanter. What was another one? Oh, he's going to be changed to Israel. Yep. But Jacob in Israel has a different meaning. Jacob means supplanter. He's one who's cheater, actually, but as Carm pointed out, but he's been living up to his name. And so what we're seeing here is that Jacob needs to let go of doing things his way, so to speak. Let go of control and rely on Jehovah. Now, Dad, 24 through 32. There's what Joe was talking about right there.
For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. sun rose up on him as he passed from the open, and limping because of his hip. Therefore, from this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip and the sinew of the thigh.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for that. Turns out to be, even though it's an actual event and things actually happen, this turns out to be an incredible metaphor. And look at the tenacity or the tenaciousness of Jacob here, wrestling with this man until daybreak, till the man touches his thigh. But he asks him what his name is, and I guess that's the highlight here. And Jacob says, Jacob, and he changes his name. Your name's going to be Israel. What does Israel mean? So Jacob meant supplanter, deceiver. What does Israel mean? He who strives with God. And my footnote says, or God strives, but probably we'll go with he who strives with God. He's wrestling with Jehovah here, really. I don't know if this is Jesus in the form of a man. I don't know. We're not getting a lot of details. He doesn't even give his name. But he does change Jacob's name. I have seen God face to face, he says. My life has been preserved. So that was his takeaway from it. Strive with God could also have the idea of rule with God or have power with God. Now you think about not just Jacob, but the nation of Israel, as you go through their history. The descendants of Israel, do they strive with God in their history? Yeah. Now, I'm going to look at this passage with some positive and negative. The negative is they did strive with God in a negative way, constantly kicking back at him. Wanting to be in control themselves instead of leaving Jehovah God as their king. So it's not a lovely history. There seem to be always wrestling with Jehovah. So that's what makes this an amazing metaphor. I'll get just a minute there, Ted. The strongest joint in the body would be, as I understand it, that hip area. There's a lot of strength in there, a lot of muscle. And it was dislocated. So that could be a reminder that God is in, and that stayed with Israel, with Jacob, physically. As far as I understand, he had that, I guess you could say, a limp after that. A reminder that who's really in control? Who really has the ultimate power? Jehovah does. And yet in the positive way, through faith here, this striving with God can be a positive and a good thing. But there's some things we need to do, which that first reading that Mr. Givens read here over in the 32, 9 through 12 is basically, look at verse 10, I am unworthy of all the loving kindness and of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant, Jacob says. He's really admitting his shortcomings and his downfalls here. And he's accepting God's forgiveness. 1 John 1, 9. I haven't forgotten about you, Ted. I just want to finish my thought here. 1 John 1, 9 relates to this point. I'll read it. If we confess our sins, and I think really that's what Jacob's doing here, he is faithful and righteous to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say if we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. So the highlight here is if we confess our sins. That's what I want to use as a takeaway from the New Testament. Related thought, humble confession going on here. Rather than personal self-reliance, we see Jacob slowly changing from personal self-reliance to relying on God. This is what it takes to make an Israel out of a Jacob. Being humbled here, actually. And before God allows us in the promised land, and I'm using that the way we are in Joshua, our Joshua series, we must confess our sins, don't we? It's coming to God, and coming to God in faith requires that we do something with ourselves. Elevate ourselves or humble ourselves. Get the pride out of the way. I have one more point, but Ted, before you forget yours, what were you thinking? Yeah. Right. Ted's, for those of you who can't hear, Ted's referring to when Israel, and we'll read this in Samuel, where Israel wanted to be like the nations around them and have a king. That's an example, I think, of this striving with God. One example. Yeah. And then Israel and Judah's history of their downhill slide. But in one sense, the striving of God can, because of God's love for us, can be a positive thing if we work with Him and His power and the power He gives us from Him. So we can ask the question, does God wrestle with people today to bring them to a change of mind? They're going one direction. Does God wrestle with us in any way? Turn us around. I'm seeing some nods. Have any examples? From life? Okay. And as you're thinking of... Okay, thank you, Ted. And as you're thinking of this, think of Jacob and what he's gone through. What he did in his deception and then what happened to him up there in his in-law land. What are you thinking, Mom? Nothing? Oh, you agree? Well, I'm asking a question. Essentially, I'm asking a question. What can you learn from Jacob? And does God work with us in that way? Kel? Good thought, and I don't know if this is being recorded, but no way I'm going to be able to repeat that and get it recorded. So we'll move on to Laverne.
Well, as you're talking, I'm thinking of my niece.
Yeah.
She is over 16 years old, raised Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So God had been with her the whole time, but she didn't recognize that.
Sounds like she kind of hit rock bottom, too, of some sort.
Oh, she hit rock bottom.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's a good example here. Joe? He beguiled. Yeah, exactly. He. Okay, so let's go back to Jacob. Thanks for segueing us back there, Joe. So He beguiled his father, who was Isaac, who was white in the eyes, blind. So he used that to his advantage. But later, Jacob was up, or perhaps gone, up there in in-law land. Was how was he beguiled by Laban? Wife swap. Yeah. Must not have been a lot of lighting back there in those tents. I don't know. The veil and the tents and the darkness, and he didn't realize. I struggle visualizing that whole thing. But anyway, we have to go back to their culture, not put their culture in ours. And he ends up with, he was deceived. So it's kind of, what's the saying we have for that kind of thing? What goes around comes around, yeah. And maybe gets us to thinking about the consequences of our action. Have any of us ever realized maybe something that we've done to somebody else in the past, and we just kind of blew it off, didn't think about that, and then something comes around where someone does something to us that wakes us up and gets us to think, oh, well, I'm not going to blow up and get mad at that person because I did it to this person over here. I don't know if any of us have done a Jacob type of thing, but we're just... Yeah, what? Because we're also, I don't know if you guys can see this word, a bit flawed. We're flawed individuals, so we have to trust. If we're truly seeking the Lord, then we need to develop our faith and not fight against God, but fight with Him, use His power. Which I think that's why I think this is a great metaphor. We're going to see this with Joseph's brothers, where they, what goes around comes around. Even though I don't know how you want to take Joseph and the way he described his dreams, but they treated him harshly, threw him in that pit. He gets sent away. He's out of their lives. But then later on, comes back to haunt them, you might say. And we'll get to Joseph. That's an awesome story. Anything else on Jacob wrestling here? Any takeaways, take-homes, thoughts I'm overlooking? Yeah.
Backing up to verse 10, we read 4.
Yes.
You see the Jacob's attitude changes. He's got enough, as Joe said, he's got enough conscience. God told him to return to his own country in verse 9, and he said to God, I'm not worthy to release all the deeds of steadfast love and the faithfulness that you've shown to your servants, talking about himself.
Mm-hmm. Large family, yep.
I realize what he had done, and I'm not worthy of your steadfast love. I mean, you were steadfast to me, but I haven't been to you. That's what it takes to come back from what you've done before.
Exactly. Which was our second point, humble confession rather than personal self-reliance. That's what it takes to make an Israel out of Jacob. And so God... That we ask ourselves, does God humble us in any ways? And that's what we're talking about here. Does he bring us to his knees? He's bringing Jacob to his knees here with this wrestling thing. But you put this wrestling thing together with what Mr. Given just pointed out, that what I think in verse 9 is a, or 10 of 32 is a confession and a point of turning around and starting to recognize Jehovah and relying on the Lord instead of ourselves. Boy, that's a lifetime endeavor, isn't it, as people of God? Joe? Yeah. Oh, yeah. They reconcile here, don't they? Which 33 is a beautiful chapter, actually. Jacob wants to give him a gift, and Esau says, verse 9, I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own. In other words, he's saying, literally, that means I have all I need. I have everything I need. So Esau is not holding that grudge, sounds like. Ted?
Mm-hmm.
which verse are you? Oh, you're back in 32? I quickly move. Well, we're looking at 32 and 33 together. Which verse in 32? For you said, I will surely prosper you and make your descendants. Yes. So if you go back, Ted, to as Jacob's on his way to his in-laws' land, before he marries Jacob or Rachel and Leah, there's a Jacob's dream there in 28 verses 10 and following. And the ladder comes down. We spent a lot of time on that, or some time on that. And there's the Lord almost repeating word for word what he said to Abraham. Yeah, there's that blessing. So when he wrestles with God, he's asking again for a blessing. It's like he's wanting reassurance as he goes along the way. The blessing that Isaac gave to him is, at least what we have recorded, is fairly brief. So I wonder, the Bible doesn't tell us, I wonder if, you know, since Jacob stole that blessing, I just wonder if that's been gnawing on his mind and he wants to hear it directly from God. I'm could be reading into that, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but that's something to chew on there. I mean, it probably would be eating at my conscience if I had done that to Esau. So Ted, we're in 33 where we're reconciling with Esau. And Jacob arrives in Shechem. Shechem is a very, very key city in Canaan, because in 18, Jacob's actually going to buy a piece of land there. Does Jacob's family own any land in Canaan up to this point? In Canaan? Just the Canaan? Huh? Well, who? Abraham. Did Abraham purchase any land? It's a cave down farther south. Right now what I'm referring to is 33:18. Jacob buys some land in Shechem. But the family has land. It's just not here. It's down south. It's a cave where Sarah was buried and Abraham. So here, Shechem is the caves of Machpelah that Abraham purchased are farther down south. Here Shechem is boop right in the middle of Canaan, where they're going to inherit later, over 400 years later. Significant. They just have a toehold, but they don't have the land. All right? Still wanderers, but they're still operating on this, which is why they will receive the blessing, the land blessing, the great descendants blessing, and then the third blessing. All the nations of the earth will be blessed. And I don't think, as Israel went through its history, I don't think they totally comprehended that third one. Maybe didn't even appreciate the other two. So he bought the piece of land, 19, where he had pitched his father's tent from the hand of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Then he erected an altar there and called it El Israel, God, the God of Israel. Okay, 34. Yes.
And when we say Jacob and Esau reconciled, which it appears that they do, but it is interesting that Esau says, we'll accompany you, and Jacob kind of, you know, begs off that, well, we're traveling slowly, and if we go as fast as you, we're the ones that ride, the flocks, and blah, blah, blah. So you go on ahead, and it makes it sound like, you go on ahead, we'll catch up with you. And then Esau goes,
well, Esau's gonna, and his descendants are gonna end up inhabiting and occupying what's later gonna be Edom. So Petra falls in that. Yeah, south, out in the desert, southeast.
Mm-hmm.
It's Edom. It's going to become Edom. Watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, the second one, or third one. And the third one. That was filmed in Petra. Yeah, if I was going to answer, Kelly's wondering, is Jacob afraid of Esau here? I think he still is. Is he wanting to stay in the land of promise? I think he does. I think it's a little bit of both. That's my think so. Yeah. And that was probably true, but it was also maybe a good way to say, Esau, you going? Because Esau's there with his men. They're fighting men. It's not, you know, Esau's could take them easily right now, but he chooses not to. So the Lord's protective hand is all along through here in these chapters. 34, we are introduced to a little more to Dinah, who is a daughter, I believe the only daughter of Jacob. How? What do you think about that? Dinah with 12 brothers. We have a song, Dinah's in the Kitchen. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Well, here someone's with Dinah, and it's not a good thing. It's Shechem, the prince of the land, and he saw her, and he took her by force, verse 2. Do you all know this story? I don't want to read it, really. I'm hoping you read it. Would anybody summarize it for me? Us. Loudly. Chapter 34. Go ahead.
So basically she was taken by force, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Let's just clarify, the guys, all the relatives of Shechem. Yeah. Shechem's a prince, but there's a city going to be, I'm assuming, named after him. Circumcision. Yep. And we're talking killed them. Yeah. Simeon and Levi. Correct. Would have been better for them to say, no, you guys are not circumcised like we are. We appreciate your interest in our sister, but we're going to remain separate. They went a little too far, don't you think? I mean, this is murder here. Yeah, of the family, yeah. Yeah, kind of like a jealous husband. Yeah, 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 you can, yeah, we can, that's right, it's human reaction, and you can see these brothers. Well, we talk about that even today, brothers standing up for little sister and putting the boyfriends of the little sister through the ringer, through the microscope. Keeping an eye on him, thump, thump. Mo. Yeah, yeah. To get them to give Dinah to his son Shechem as a wife. Yeah. Right. Right. And what exactly? The good summary there. And what Simeon and Levi say is, because they want this intermarrying thing. Later, that becomes something that
When they get into the land of Canaan, they for sure were not to do that. They, meaning the Israelites. But we see this even here. And Simeon and Levi actually refer to that, don't they? That was their reason for talking them into being circumcised. We cannot do this thing, 14, to give our sister to one who's uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. They don't say anything about the covenant and all that, but I think that's what they mean. And so they say, on this condition, we'll consent to you. So they use that as a chance to kill every male. Whew. Mary? Maybe. Treacherous to God. Number one, Shechem and all those guys, their hearts probably would not be totally turned over to Jehovah God in faith like this family. And number two, Simeon and Levi used it in a way that was not right. That is why, keep your fingers in 34 here, but turn over to Genesis 49. This is where Israel's blessing his sons. Kyle, could you read 49, 5 through 7?
Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. Let my soul not enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly. Because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is feared, and their wrath for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel.
Right. Levi is not going to get land possession. Do you realize that? Levi does not get land. They get cities. That's interesting. And Simeon is kind of absorbed by Judah when it gets right down to it. Joe? Dinah? They took Dinah from Shechem's house and went forth. And that's the Bible in its brevity kind of leaves us hanging.
And the law of Moses later deals with that kind of situation. I don't know how this family dealt with that. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to guess that they allowed her to marry somebody, but I don't have any proof of that. So I good thought, Joe. We'll be thinking about that all week now, won't we? You feel sorry for her? Well, yeah, that's a sin that's has a lot of as Kyle was pointing out, there's a lot of consequences of sin, and there's one of them. And in terms of blessing, Levi and Simeon are going to suffer consequences. Are you still in 49, Genesis 49? That first blessing, Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. Uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence because you went to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. This is Jacob or Israel blessing Reuben. Isn't that a great blessing?
But he's bringing this choices and consequences. Why is Reuben, what did Reuben do? That's chapter 35, 22. Carm, are you there? Can you read 35, 22 for us?
35, 22.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And Reuben's firstborn of all of them, but he's not going to take the preeminence. Kind of interesting. Esau was firstborn, but Esau's not going to have the blessing that Jacob is. Chapter 38. And I wanted to get to 38 today. It's not going to work. We have two babies. Perez was actually the one that was not coming out first. Zerah was coming out first, and the midwife put a scarlet thread around his wrist. So if you haven't read chapter 38, read it for next week, please. I don't want to skip over 38 because it's plopped right in the middle of this. Right in the middle of the story of Joseph, actually, and it's sordid and it's weird, and you wonder why is it in there. But this is why I'm bringing up the blessings of Israel, because it involves Judah. But here, these are Judah's sons, and Perez is actually the second born. They're twins, but he comes out first. Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim is the youngest, but Israel ends up blessing Ephraim over Manasseh, and he says that's the way it's going to be. See this younger thing pattern coming up? Things happening that aren't the way human beings expected them, especially the way they did inheritance and all of that. Things that are not working out the way human beings say, oh, this is the way it's going to be. And yet God has a different thing in mind, right? And he's working it out according to what goes on here. People's choices and consequences. So God's ability to control working with men and their faith, kind of fascinating. That's what this article here is about. I've referred to this. You can read it at your leisure. And it's written by one of Kelly's nephews. He's a young kid, but something to think about. I think it's does a good job on it. So please read up to 38, and then get as far as you can in the story of Joseph. Joseph takes up a lot of chapters, but it's just a tremendous, as you know, tremendous account of faith. All right? Okay, thanks for your input, and do we have lesson 6 ready? All right, we want to get that out.